Hey, it's Greg. Thanks for checking out Toronto Today. So what happens when an Indigenous filmmaker and playwright seeks out people pretending to be Indigenous? It's called The Pretendians, a new documentary that airs on CBC tonight on this particular Friday, National Day of Truth and Reconciliation. And we talked to Drew Hayden Taylor about just that, about his pursuit, about his curiosity, about the implications of this, about the motivation for this. It's a fascinating documentary. I hope you can see it, but here's our conversation about it on Toronto Today. It's great to have you on the show here in Toronto. Thank you very much for making the time.
Pleasure is mine, sir.
This feels like one of the more timely and important works. Sometimes you've done a book or you've been involved with broadcast media, and it's been a look back. This is a very current issue and probably one that was that was important for you to sort of shed a spotlight on.
Yeah, it was while we were in pre-production and production, it was like something was popping up every month, practically dealing with the issue of so-called pretendianism. We were like dancing as fast as we could to do it, because it's an ongoing, ever-present and increasing issue in both the First Nations culture and the dominant culture too.
The biggest question, and you ask it in the documentary, what's the motivation? And it's not always one thing. It can be multi-pronged. And in this sort of, some of it is about the look and feel of it. Some of it is about social media projection. Some of it's material gain. Did you ever isolate any one thing being more prominent than the other, Drew?
Well, in my experience, it's one of three reasons. I mean, it's a complex issue. I'm not sure it can be boiled down to three issues, but I think one of it is a concept of wanting to belong, wanting to be part of something that is now viewed as being cool, hip, and interesting. You know, it's like people like to belong to groups. That's why people join gangs. They join the army. They join Boy Scouts. They want to become part of an organization or a gang or a group of people. Secondly, financial gain. A lot of the people who have been outed for being pretendians are in it for money. They're in it to write books or make movies academic positioning in universities or other, even as simply as getting cheaper gas or anything that's delivered to the reserve is partially tax exempt. So a lot of people used to get these fake Métis or status cards, and they would buy a car, have it delivered to the reserve on the edge of the reserve, have a picture taken, and then they would get it tax free without having been part of the reserve. So different things like that have been part of people wanting to be join the club, as we say.
And Drew Hayden Taylor. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Yeah, yeah.
And the last one, the third one, which I think is actually one of the most common and most unfortunate, is the concept of family lore. A lot of people have heard from their uncle, their grandparents, whatever. We have some native blood in us. I've always been told that we have some Indigenous ancestors, and they take that, they embrace it, and they hold on to it, and they milk it and market it, and without doing the necessary research to prove that, yes, indeed, they have Indigenous ancestry. And, you know, a lot of people have somebody back in the 1700s, which really does not qualify you to be Native in a contemporary sense either.
It's such a fascinating, it's a fascinating time, but I know it's a frustrating time as well to get to the bottom of a lot of these things. We're talking about The Pretendians, a documentary from CBC and The Passionate Eye, and we're speaking with Drew Hayden Taylor. Some of it is, what I noticed when the news of Carrie Bourassa broke from the University of Saskatchewan, and she said, well, this is what I identify as, and that's a tricky part of our society. We're having more honest conversations. We're being more open and more inclusive, but that's tricky as well, isn't it? Because we want people to say, this is who I am. This is who I appear to be. This is who I think I am. But it's that tricky part for a university to say, you know, we've got a professor here with tenure, and we've got a lot of we need to weigh the complaints of people going to the university and other faculty with how a person quote unquote identifies. Like that had a lot of, a lot of debate around it and a lot of controversy around both sides of the issue.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the situation of universities, like University of Saskatchewan, and also places like Queen's University, which had their own issue, and more recently in Maclean's magazine, they did this big article on the Emily Carr College. These they're making a conscious effort to hire as many First Nations people as they can to help, you know, with reconciliation and that. But oftentimes the problem is people will tick off a box on a job application that says, you know, First Nations, Métis, or Inuit. And that's where it stops. The places of employment, it's an unfortunate place where, like, the higher echelons of universities and colleges, for the most part, and I'm willing to be incorrect on this, are probably older white men, and they're in an uncomfortable position of, okay, you say you're Native, now prove it to us, you know, and but there should be some sort of way of following up and making sure anybody who claims to be Indigenous can walk the walk and talk the walk.
We've noticed this in the States, but it's been a different issue, hasn't it? We've had Rachel Dolezal. There have been a couple other prominent people who've gained and gleaned big social media followings by claiming to be Black. And they have been questioned and called out, and it gets ugly and it gets personal about whether indeed they are African-American. Like, so it's not a unique situation to Canada or being Indigenous, is it?
No, it's a culture worship, for lack of a better term, you know. But it really, in my opinion, doesn't mean much. I could say I would really love to be a Korean. I can call myself Korean, but I'm not Korean. So you have to take all that into consideration.
Some of what, there's a fascinating moment in the doc where you go with the director of the Tribal Alliance Against Frauds. And
yes,
she's made this, like, she's on a mission is the best way I can describe it. She is, you know, this is, you know, Kevin Costner in JFK. He's on a mission to get the killers of John F. Kennedy. She's on a mission to find an alleged pretendian that is teaching at a university.
That's correct. Yeah. Leanne Constantino. This organization has a travel budget. They go around, and basically the whole mandate of the organization is to examine and either verify or not verify people who claim to be Indigenous. And in the particular case of our documentary, she was going for the guy who is one of the higher ups in the Indigenous Studies program at Queen's University. And we've been talking with him for a long time, trying to get him to come on air and talk about this. Mm-hmm. He has claimed, he's from America, he claims to be Cherokee, he moved up here, and then he helped set up this Indigenous community called RDoC that doesn't really exist. It's a website, and he is claimed to be the chief of RDoC. And I went to RDoC, and it's just a group of like three houses and a mailbox. But he is claimed to be Cherokee, chief of the Algonquin RDoC community. And it's actually quite silly and ludicrous in that manner.
When I watch that scene, Drew, and when I watch a good chunk of the documentary, it reminds me of the Michael Moore documentaries. It reminds me of Roger and Me. It reminds me of Bowling for Columbine. Like, regardless of what we all would think about Michael Moore, good or bad or indifferent, is that sort of a style that you were looking to emulate at all? It's what reminded me of, and it's a big compliment I can pay, because those were incredible movies.
They were, though Roger and Me had a huge glaring error in it. I don't know if you heard about this. He had actually met with Roger and did an interview, but he decided to exclude it because it it wasn't as dramatic.
Of course. Yeah.
So what we were doing is we had this question about pretendians. What motivates them? What are the repercussions? And all these questions. So that's what we were going out to ask. We weren't going out to out anybody. We weren't going out to make life difficult for anybody. We just had questions that we wanted answered. And that is the function of this documentary.
I want to ask you about, it's on The Passionate Eye tonight, on CBC 9 o'clock. National Day for Truth and Reconciliation. When it was first announced, this was going to be a national holiday every year, we can remember when that happened, there was the rawness of the residential school topic for the lost children, the survivors, their families, their communities. What did you first think? Were you absolutely on board with the concept of a day? Were you worried there was a little bit of a is this for real, or is this a little bit of virtue signaling here? How did you view it?
Well, you're also forgetting the discovery of the lost graves too. That was all part of all that. Mm-hmm. I think anytime there's education and acknowledgement, it can only be a good thing. And it's also not a national holiday. I think only two provinces recognize it. PEI, and I think is it Nova Scotia or New Brunswick? I'm not sure. I mean, so it is what it is. We in the Native community are going to acknowledge and respect it and wear our orange shirts. And it's more than just wearing an orange shirt, too. It's understanding what it means and what Canada went through, both the Native and non-Native people, to get to this point. Because it's basically a cultural and actual physical genocide of people and who they are. And there's one of the reasons we're doing this documentary on Pertidians is there's very few things more personal to people in specifically or in general than their identity, who they are, and the whole residential school system, colonization, and the Pertidians were all basically attacks on Indigenous identity.
Do you hope that the day going forward is also it's a look back, and it's an important look back, and it's an important reminder of, you know, harsh lessons, intergenerational trauma, things people like me can learn about my forefathers that, you know, we make sure that our generation and future generations don't even come close to repeating these atrocities? But is it also about looking forward, feeling a way that the, you know, people can trust each other, people can look to each other and have the same goals? Because, you know, I felt that as a kid, I felt that as a teenager. I felt a level of distrust when I had Indigenous friends, when we played baseball in communities, hockey in communities, and I understood it. My dad was a history teacher, so he's like, this is why a lot of this is happening, and this is why you might feel, you know, shunned by people or communities. How do we get to it? Do you want the day in a roundabout way? I'm asking a long question, but do you want the day to be about the past as well as the present and the future?
Well, I can best answer this by using a cliched but true answer. If we don't remember the past, we're condemned to relive it. So the more we know about what happened, hopefully we'll know what will not happen in the future. And I'm speaking also about this from somebody who wrote a book of science fiction short stories and also edited and compiled a book of Indigenous futurisms, where I have people writing essays about where we'll be in 20, 40, 100 years from now, or where we should be. So all of this is all tied up into the same thing. There's no future without the past.
Yeah, it's so well said. I look and I think I remember sitting with my parents last year on the lawn, and it was a couple weeks after Kamloops. We were all still sitting around outside, and they basically said, you know, we whiffed, like people born in the 40s and 50s who didn't know about it. If it wasn't in their neighbor, like they just whiffed. They go, this is one we missed, and we feel really terrible that we missed it, that this was happening again, not 10, 20 kilometers from their house and not knowing anybody who was like, oh, what do you do? Well, I work in a residential school and this is what happens. But I think there's a whole generation of people, our parents, people born in the 70s and 80s, who are, you know, if any way owning up to ignorance about it now, not owning up to the atrocities, we should be seeking those people out. And to be honest, there should be repercussions for them. But the people that were, you know, bystanders, innocent or otherwise, I think they feel really bad. It was good to hear them say that they missed it, as opposed to not being accountable for it.
Right, exactly. I've heard people say that was before my time or not my fault. No, as somebody once said, if your parents and grandparents were privileged and you're living off that privilege, you still have a responsibility.
Yeah, that's the best way I can put it. And that's a great lesson for the day. I know you're we're out of time. Congratulations on the documentary. I can't recommend enough that people give it a go. Paul Kemp, who obviously you worked with, reached out to me on it and said, this is going to blow you away. And it has. So thank you very much for the time with us today.
No problem, sir. Pleasure.
I'm not just a pawn in this game.
3 nights a week on Global.
They're putting targets on their back. Massive.
Drama.
I guess you could say I'm in a showman.
They're just so in love and so annoying. Enough.
Betrayal.
The guy just put up his best friend now.
And plot twists.
What is happening right now?
You'll never see coming.
If you're coming for me,
this is perfect.
I'm coming for you then.
It'll be a battle.
Like, it'll be war.
Big Brother Canada. All new Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Sundays on Global. Stream on Stack TV.